Hello, my name is Dr. Susan Swem, and I'm Executive Director of Now I See a Person Institute. And with me today, I have two of our colleagues, David Abramovich and Ashley Lopez. And so I'm really excited to have both of these members of Now I See a Person Institute with us. And they represent some of the work that we're going to be doing in 2024. And best wishes to everybody in 2024. I hope it is a wonderful year for everybody who's able to listen to this podcast. So, one of the things that we were talking about just a few minutes ago is humanizing mental health, humanizing our journeys to wellness. And one of the things that you find in talking with people about this theme is that we all have experienced hardships. And I think if anybody lives long enough that they've experienced many hardships, and that if wellness is humanized, then there's great propensity for us to overcome almost anything that happens. And often we find through our research is when people see themselves not as a person, but maybe perhaps as a severe mental illness diagnosis or label, or they somehow lose sight that they foremost are a person that is struggling. So I was wondering if either of my participants would like to share something on what they feel is important for people to hear and their journeys to wellness.
I'll start. What stood out for me in Dr. Swim's introduction was that if we live long enough, that we are going to experience extreme hardship. And for me, I believe that hardship, is just part of life. And often, when we do experience extreme hardships, the symptoms that come along with that often can mirror certain diagnoses. And I think it's very important to look at the context in which these symptoms come about. So, like when someone, for example, is grieving the death of someone they love dearly, they're obviously going to be extremely sad. And that sadness will eventually go away. So, for us, we believe in lovingly and non-judgmental support on that person's path to healing. And if that person is supported and doesn't feel judged and is allowed to grieve in the way that they want to grieve or grieve naturally, then they will be okay. And they will, in fact, become stronger for the experience, for a human experience that is universal. Instead of, maybe prematurely diagnosing someone. I think it's important to be patient and let them go through what they need to go through. I think it's very important for mental health professionals to be keenly aware of that. And I think it's very important for consumers also to be aware of that and to advocate for themselves. And say, no, it's okay. I'm just going through a hard time. I will be okay. Because as long as there's hope, there's a path and a journey to wellness that does not include necessarily diagnosing.
So I was wondering, Ashley, if you wanted to hop in and springboard a conversation off of that.
Yeah, building off of what you and David said, I think there's a huge importance and emphasis of recognizing that as humans, we are experiencing an emotional journey. And that means there's going to be good times and there's going to be bad times, and there's going to be times that feel great and times that feel horrible. And that's all a part of the process of being a person. And the wonderful thing about being a human is that we're not entirely bound to our emotions. We don't have to identify with a certain emotional state. We most certainly can, but we don't have to. We can grow past it and we can evolve with it. And it's normal to feel grief and loss and extreme pain. And I like to think that that's one of the beautiful things about life is understanding how precious it is and how wondrous it is. Like you see within art, like the Renaissance came right after a period in which people were starving and dying all over the world, and people lived through that and created beautiful art. And now we commemorate it throughout history and we go, whoa, they really grew and transformed. So I would just love to remind people that it can get better. And it will get better. And when you have the good times, cherish them. And when you are going through suffering, just understand that it will pass. You will grow past it. And something that helps me personally when I'm going through grief or any kind of negative emotion that sitting in the emotion allows it to pass quicker and allows it to pass in a way that is more meaningful.
One of the things that we've been doing for the past couple of hours is talking a lot about the purpose of us being together. And there's a couple of colleagues that are missing right now that maybe we can incorporate their voices as well. We're going to try to be sending out some thoughts on social media and through podcast. A little bit more often this year is one of our goals in order to help reach both those who suffer and clinicians about finding hope. And I think in just reflecting back on what we've been talking about is that we've been talking about like the years of being together and what has made Now I See a Person Institute helpful. What we have learned at Now I See a Person Institute. And I think that most of the people know that Now I See a Person Institute was very much mirrored after the work of the Houston Galveston Institute and our practice of collaborative dialogical practices, and that we are a team of clinicians, including therapists and life coaches, that we work with people that most of our clients have lost all hope. And they have had many different types of diagnoses and many different types of treatment before being referred to us. Most of our clients are self-referred or referred by their clinicians. And I think just in thinking back over the time that at least the three of us have been together, is that the commonalities of what we have experienced. And a lot of those commonalities has been that we are very much client directed, and that means that we see a person in front of us, and we see what they share is important, not what maybe a theory shares is important, or what perhaps a diagnostic label shares is important, but truly what that person that is seeking our help wants us to see and hear, and then how they want to be able to have their life different, how they want to quit suffering. And we always include the family members with all of our clients, because we do need a village for everybody. And I think when change occurs, everybody shifts and everybody becomes happier, for a lack of a better word. And I know that a long time ago when I was writing on this, there were clinicians that didn't think that change could be this simple, that this could be possible. You know, one of the earlier quotes that we had that I've spoken about in a previous podcast was a client who, you know, her father had killed himself, and, you know, she was coming in mainly because her mom was worried about her, and she was doing quite a lot of drugs and other types of things to cope with her pain and her confusion and her sadness. And after therapy was finished, we were still in contact after a couple of years, and I asked her to describe what was helpful in seeking therapy. And she said that therapy was a time in your life that you had somebody to talk to who cared and had the time to listen. And I remember putting that into a quote on process ethics, which is something that I've been writing on for a fairly long period of time, and that really guides our work. And I remember one of the reviewers said something very, very, it was kind of a cuss word of non-belief, along with a, and when I saw that, I was kind of struck how I think it's hard for many clinicians to know that number one, healing is possible with their clients, and that it doesn't have to be some very formulaic way of treating a client or the family, and that change occurs. And one of the things I noticed when I was teaching was that when you were teaching clinicians to be clinicians, to be licensed clinicians, that often when you would sit in practicum classes or other types of classes, as a professor, you would not see the student anymore. All you would see is a theory. And so maybe a student that you had in another class, and they were talking about, I don't know, their perceptions about things, when they would be in front of a client, it was hard to see the presence of the therapist because it was so overshadowed by the theory or by a label. And so even the way that they would be talking to the quote unquote client would be so much different than you ever heard them talk before in any other context. And we used to call that acting as if you were a therapist, because I think sometimes people try to, they want so badly to help their clients that they find this therapist space that kind of takes the humanity even out of them, accidentally, very much accidentally. And with all of our work of seeing people and not necessarily viewing the label or just the symptoms or other types of things that kind of are non-humanizing variables, we find our clients heal in phenomenal capacity, and that you know, we've talked about for a long period of time, that our clients heal with much better thoughts than we could ever come up with ourselves. That our clients direct us on how they want to heal, and they come up with the ways that they want to heal. And I think in this current time that we all find ourselves in, we really want to help people know that healing is possible, that wellness is possible, and that everybody, not only on this podcast, but most people that we know that have gone through very serious times, that they have lives that they call beautiful, like that was in our last podcast on Mad in America. And that people do not need us after a certain period of time, that therapy does not go on and on and on. And I think sometimes when we do kind of divert from just seeing through that lenses of a diagnosis or psychiatric label, that people are seen for much more than that. And we see that they have these inherent abilities to self-solve, and that they take over after a while of needing anybody in their life really to problem solve. Not that we don't need a community of people all the time, but we definitely do not need therapists. So I'm wondering if what your thoughts are on the direction that I just took this narrative into.
Yeah, I mean, I echo all those thoughts and sentiments. I've been with Now I See a Person for 10 years, and I've seen what other people would call miracles, but to us, it's just normal. People coming in with very extreme symptoms and you know, symptoms that most clinicians feel need to be dealt with extreme measures. And when we journey with them and we're there with them in their journey to wellness, those symptoms begin to evaporate. And they begin to see hope. And I was a little bit skeptical, but I knew there had to be something different. And I found what I was looking for at Now I See a Person. And I think many clinicians and life coaches who have trained with us have seen the same dynamic occur. And it's something that needs to be replicated, and it's something that needs to be taught, because the other ways are just not feasible and don't lead to the same outcomes as kindness and really walking with someone else, with them sort of being the driver and having those intrinsic strengths to tap into to heal themselves.
I would like to add that by having the client be in this role of empowerment, we're giving them the opportunity to see themselves like with confidence and see that they themselves are cared for and that they're not problematic. And that's so needed in this world. Like, people need to know that they're okay and that they're cared for. And that's what I love about the work we're doing here, is that we're inspiring genuine hope, and that we're getting people excited about what gets them excited about life. Like, we're not, like, I love how we just we allow people to give themselves their own healing journey, and give them their own hero story, because everyone has the possibility to grow and to move past the pain and the suffering. And I love that our philosophy, your philosophy, Dr. Swim.
It's our philosophy. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, our philosophies talk about how the person only they know what's gonna heal them. So what has made, you know, each individual go through something, like get through something, it's going to be completely different based off of who that person is. So like for me, I could talk about painting colors all day and that's what gets me through. But for someone else, like, it may be yoga or working out or cars or animals. And I think it's beautiful that we're building relationships and communities with humans, and so that they can heal themselves, and we're just walking with them and guiding them and just checking in and making sure they're okay, because that's what everybody needs. Everybody needs a hand to hold. Everybody just needs a little reminder that they themselves are powerful and that they will make it through the hardships. And
so in some ways, I think it's like co-guiding. So what I mean by co-guiding is like, it's like, you know, I don't know if we guide each other, but I think we guide each other. Like we're in, I think that to be in these relationships where we're helping people, especially as a therapeutic team, where we are all holding each other's hands. And what's nice about the therapeutic teams that we're building this year is that they include both the clinicians and the life coaches. And we've been doing that, I think, you know, since 2019. I'm not really sure what the year was before COVID. It's, I think we'll always say that, like, oh, it was before COVID or it was after COVID. But for quite some time, and then now incorporating the voices of those who have had their own treatment. And you know, it very much for me is mirroring some of the work that I think a lot of our colleagues are doing in different countries, and what some people are wanting to do here in peer coaching. But we're combining clinicians with this as well. And so in our journeys with our clients in 2024, or even our teaching within our certificate program, our CEU programs, or our life and family coaching programs, it's a community of people working. So if you think about that, you have people out there that have lost hope for whatever reason, and that unfortunately previous treatment was not successful, you have an abundance of voices to be able to talk about what's happening. It's not just where someone is individually receiving services, but it's where you have a group of people who want to help, helping those who at this point in time in need. But I don't even think in some ways that this is, you know, like I remember one in the early days, what we used to do is that we didn't even used to really kind of call ourselves like therapist or psychologist, or at one point in time, I can remember at the Institute, we called ourselves consultants, because we were really these co-consultants or co-participants, and seeing how people wanted to lead lives that where they weren't suffering, but where they did find that life was very beautiful. And, you know, I think especially at this point in time, where there are so many people that are suffering, that we can do some things to help prevent it to where it gets to the stages of having clinicians refer the clients to us. And I can really see that through the life coaching programs that we're going to be doing and are doing right now, that that really encourage wellness before it gets to a point where it could be the stakes could be so much higher. And I think having people that have been in those shoes working alongside of us is such an amazing action and opportunity. So, because who better to have like this sense of community and this sense of participation than those who have suffered greatly? You know, it reminds me of when we used to work a lot with on different venues, and people might have a parent partner. And I always remember when people would say, "Oh, I have a parent partner," it was so much of a different tone in their voice than "I have a therapist," or "I have a psychologist," or "I have a social worker." It's like, "I have a parent partner. I have someone that has gone through similar times. And now they are, and now they're not." So my hope is with this endeavor that we're all doing at this point in time, and especially through the social media, is that through our voices and our experiences, that we can help people know it's going to be okay. That they're not alone. They're not alone in their ideas, that there's always services available, and that there's always hope. So I'm wondering if like maybe David and then maybe Ashley, like you could just kind of add to that and then we could wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's very easy for clinicians to double down very often in their treatment, like, "Well, this formulaic way of doing therapy is not working, so let's refer to a psychiatrist and use meds." And then when those meds don't work, well, hospitalization's the next step. Well, kind of frightens me. Like, what's the next step after that? So the next step is hopelessness. But to me, there doesn't have to be that sort of continuum of doubling down. It can start with talking to people that care and have the time to listen. Mm-hmm. And that ladder of escalation doesn't have to occur. And, you know, there are times where we are going to feel hopeless, but those hopeless times pass, you know, and hopelessness is fleeting when you have support and non-judgment. And it's fleeting anyways, but it's, you know, the time frame is exacerbated. And when you work with people that care for you and support you and don't judge you. And that's what I want to sort of impart in our first podcast of the year, is don't ever give up hope, because often that's all we have.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, hope is, it's vital. It is all we have in the darkness. There's a movie I watched where I think it was about Morpheus, and they were playing a game where it was like, oh, what could survive in the vacuum of space? And the one thing that could do it was hope. Mm-hmm. This was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that humans have a miraculous ability to heal. Mm-hmm. We have this amazing brain that allows us to transform and grow. And no matter the emotional death sentence we're given, we can surpass it and grow past it. And That's why I'm so excited for this work that we're doing this coming year, because being a wellness coach to me means that, like, we're normalizing the conversation. Like, everybody needs a buddy. Like, we're allowing space for people to say, hey, I'm going through something, but I just need a little bit of help here, or, you know, I just need, like, someone to tell me it's okay, and I'll surpass it. And I'm so excited to encourage people along their journey, and because I genuinely believe everybody can grow and transform and be able to surpass whatever turmoil they're going through, no matter how stuck they're in it. And I think that's very, very needed in today's day and age. There's a lot of beliefs out there that are very diminishing to the individual, and I am so excited and grateful to be able to share a counter narrative and be able to be that, like, little voice or little light at the end of the tunnel and say, you can do it. You got this. Keep going. The world will get nicer and it will be a more joyful place. You just have to keep sticking through, my friend. Like, the grief may be hard and heavy. The whole world has gone through a lot within the past couple of years. And I don't know. I like to think that it's just a reminder that there will be good days, and they're just like there are hard days, there's going to be good days, and we just have to keep going through. You got this. there's joy.
You know, I want to acknowledge, like, one of our former students. Her name was Sally Helms, and she passed away a number of years ago to an illness. And, you know, she was in training with us, and she had a client that her name was Betty, who wrote an article with us many years ago in the Journal of Systemic Therapies. And, you know, when Betty was talking about her transition from dying from not eating to having a beautiful life, that she said that working with Betty made her feel that she was the smartest teenager in the world, and she was capable of doing anything, and that she was going to be the next sportscaster. I think she became a medical doctor, not a sportscaster. But that it was the unconventional things, not the conventional things, that helped her heal. And that it was those things of what we're talking about today, of having support, of having clinicians who believe in you, of having clinicians who don't necessarily see that label of what she had said was that marked her like the scarlet letter. And in the article, she talks about that she was seen as Betty the anorexic and not Betty, and how that isolation and loneliness that she went through years of treatment before finding Sally. And that I remember her saying in the article that was like, because I was the one that combined the article together in our writing. It was Sally and Betty and Sherry and myself that saw Betty and her family. And I remember when I was asking them to all write for the article, they wrote enough for like an entire book chapter. But I remember her writing that like little by little. It was like looking at herself in a pond. And at first it was very fuzzy and she couldn't almost see that just the outline of her face. And little by little that she could see her face again. And boy, what a feeling that was. So I'm going to end with those thoughts and thoughts of hope for the future, for those who follow us, for those who see us, for those that we teach, for those that we are so fortunate to call our friends and colleagues and those who have participated with us when things weren't going well. And we hope to so much inspire hope in 2024. Thank you so much.